Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode. This is episode number 118.
Wow. Of
Making Biblical Family Life Practical. And last week, we cut into a hot potato, and that was the teenager with romantic inclinations. What do you do when your teenager comes up and thinks he or she is in love? How do you respond as a parent?
And if you didn't listen to last week, I really advise you to go listen to that, because mm-hmm. we talked about why it's important to take them seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of my friends have taught their children, you know, we don't want you dating when you're in high school. We don't want you dating at all, some of them. You know, we believe in courtship or whatever. But if you just write off your teenager come to you with these concerns, the likelihood is you're going to end up with a broken relationship. So head over there.
And it won't be the relationship between the girl.
No. It's likely to be the relationship between the parents and the teenager. So go listen to that, because that's really, it leads into what we're talking about here. And what we're talking about here is, how do you impress on your teenager that this is a serious thing and that they need to be prepared to deal with it?
Because, you know, like we said, our first advice to the parent is, Don't laugh them off. You've got to take it seriously, because, you know, when your 12-year-old says, I think I'm in love, you'd say, that's sweet, honey, but honestly, let's talk this through. But when you're talking to a 17-year-old, he knows that in just a few short months, the world is going to say, you're a grown-up, you can do what you like. And, you know, really, that's an option. That's something. And we have to consider that if we want to be an influence in that young man or young woman's life going forward, we've got to lay that foundation and have a relationship built on trust, and don't depend on our own personality to command them as they move into years when everybody considers them to be an adult. And so take that part seriously, but then we have to turn to them and in love say, you know what, I'm going to take you seriously, and part of that is, I'm going to expect you to take this seriously too. It's
right.
Not just a warm, fuzzy feeling. It's not just hearts and flowers. You're talking about lifelong commitments, life-changing decisions. And I am in love as your parent. I'm going to help you think this through as calmly as you're able to do in your state of mind. And so we wanted, you know, one of the things we talked about, and we kind of wrapped this up toward the end of that last episode, was numbers are pretty serious, solid, kind of unforgiving things. And
well, it's sobering, because part of being married is you've got to be able to maintain a household. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to pay your bills. In fact, the Word of God tells us that a man who won't provide for his household is worse than an unbeliever. That's 1 Timothy 5:8.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I just think it's a good solid principle that if the Word of God has an expectation of a certain behavior, a certain kind of conduct, you don't just walk into a situation where you're automatically out of bounds.
Right.
You know, you look at that and say, right now, I'm an unmarried, single guy. I don't have to support a family. But as soon as I take on the commitment of a family, I have a new requirement. I have to be able to support that family. I am supposed to be the provider. I'm supposed to take care of them. And, you know, we need to acknowledge that saying that the man in Scripture has the burden of being the breadwinner doesn't mean that women are forbidden to have a job or outside employment or
to make money with their own business. Look at Proverbs 31.
Yeah.
And she was investing in real estate and importing and, you know, providing goods to be sold.
Right. But the Bible does seem to say it's the man has the primary responsibility here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he shares it, delegates parts of it or whatever, the man ultimately is the one held accountable before God. And so when we're dealing with our sons in particular, this is one of the things we say, you really need to sit down. Let's have a little visit to Realityville. Okay? Let's just assume, we'll just stipulate for the argument that, okay, maybe she is the one, maybe she's the one that God's prepared for you, and maybe you are being called into marriage with this young woman. Okay, now, the honeymoon's over, what next? And that is, you you've got to support them. You've got to provide for them. So how do you walk a young man through that process? Where do you start?
Well, you know, this is probably a good exercise even for a young man who's not interested romantically, but to say, okay, let's talk about what it takes to maintain a household.
Do you remember that?
Let's make a budget of what is kind of the minimum that you're going to need to support yourself. This is a good thing to do with guys, period, Hal.
And I think really that even guys who are raised well just don't have a gut feeling for what it's going to take to support a family, just even to support themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I know the thing that I always come back to is when I went off to college, my father said, we will give you $100 a month for spending money so that you don't have to go out and distract from your studies by getting a part-time job. And, you know, a lot of my friends would have said $100 a month, man, I can't say good morning for $100 a month, but to me, it seemed like a lot. And my father said, you know, I think you now have more disposable income than I do. And I thought, I love my dad, and I know he always speaks the truth, but I just don't see that. I just can't figure that out. Well, you know, once I became a grown-up and had my own responsibilities, and I looked around and said, I've paid rent and utilities and groceries and car insurance and all these other things. You know what? $100 a month to spend on pizza would be a luxury, wouldn't it? So, yeah, you know, even a thoughtful young man probably needs to be gone through with, you know, take them by the hand and walk them through this process.
You know, come to think of it, Hal, this is probably a good process for young men and young women. Because young women can be putting pressure on a young man to move ahead in a romantic relationship, and they need to be thinking about what this is all going to cost, too.
And how often does a young woman find herself as the household manager? I mean,
managing the money in our house for a long time.
Yes,
Hal.
You have. And so, sure, this is a good reality check, really, for any young person. So, well, first things first, you got to have some place to live.
So, one thing that you can do is to look on Craigslist or some other rental listing and see what apartments, houses, trailers, whatever are going for in your area.
Wait a minute, you said a T word there. You said trailers.
I did.
Well, you know what? It's important to think back and to remember that a young couple starting out shouldn't expect themselves, and they should not be expected to by others, to live like their parents provided at the peak of their earning potential and the peak of their careers. You know, to say don't expect for a young couple starting out to find a stylish 4-bedroom house in an upscale neighborhood.
Hal, but you know what? I know people who say that for a young man to approach them about winning their daughter's heart, he'd better own a house outright and have $20,000 in the bank. But, you know, I don't know anybody our age, and we have adult children, that own their house outright and have $20,000 in the bank.
You know, to my knowledge, I only know of one young man, a very exceptional young man, who actually did own a house outright.
But his parents gave him the land, Hal.
That's right. That's totally right. And he's the exception. He's the exception. And I really liked what I think it was Vodi Balcom said something at a conference we heard where he said, I am more impressed by a young man who has a couple of $1,000s saved and a box of tools and a work ethic than I am a young man who may have inherited a house from his grandparents but has never held a steady job.
Right.
And so, you know, what should a young couple expect? You know, a 1 or 2 bedroom apartment in a fairly economical district, you know, like apartments.
But somewhere safe.
Somewhere safe.
And so, you know, that can be illustrative too, is to make a list and go look at some of the cheapest places and see, you know, would you feel comfortable leaving your wife and child here if you had to work at night?
I remember when we moved to California, and if you're out on the West Coast, hello, we love you. When we moved to California, I was shocked at the cost of housing out there.
I cried.
To find some place that, you know, we had looked at a very nice house back in Florida before we moved and decided not to buy it. And then we found that 3 times that amount wouldn't buy the same house in Central California.
Wouldn't buy the same house as garage.
Right. And so, yeah, drive around and look at neighborhoods and say, now, honest to goodness, what can you get to get a very inexpensive but safe clean, you know, kind of place that you would be comfortable with your wife being there during the day, what's that going to cost?
Well, you know, and I think that can be helpful for us as parents to realize the costs that are coming up, because I know some of our sons just recently rented a house and they're paying more for rent than we're paying in our for our mortgage because prices have gone up since we bought this house.
Yeah.
And so, you know, look for some options and then talk about what it's going to cost in utilities.
And, you know, rental properties, they typically have a typical utility rating. You know, they'll say, hey, the normally electricity and water for this house costs $120, $300, whatever it is. They can tell you that. And then what about your insurance? You know, renter's insurance to cover, you know, to cover the against loss. I mean, that's just good stewardship kind of expense. And that's something that you can go back to your agent and say, hey, okay, here's the scenario. What would this cost? We're just trying to work out a budget. So that's something that you can look at. You know, utilities too, we always think about electricity and water, but what is life without an internet connection? Without a phone? Of course, a cell phone, we kind of think of the cell phone contract as a separate thing now, but it used to be that your telephone bill was sort of part of your utilities because it was literally installed on the wall of the house. But, you know, that's something you say, hey, you're a big boy now. I expect you to pick up your own cell phone bill, and maybe you don't get 20 gigabytes of data on your own plan anymore. Or something, you know, you don't have to be hard-nosed. You can just be matter-of-fact. Say, okay, you're going to be a head of a household. You're expected to pick up the expenses. And if you're going to have cell phones, sure. Yeah, cell phones make good sense. But you need to think about what that plan's going to cost and budget for it. You need to think about your internet service in your home. You know, cable TV, if you're going to do that. Can you bundle them together? Whatever. Start going through those expenses. And we as parents need to recognize, and we also need to point out to our young people that the kind of deal that we've got, because we're long-term customers with well-established credit, or maybe we've got a contract like, you know, our cell phone contract. How many cell phones did we pay for? I think at one time we had 7 lines going.
Oh, we have 7 lines right now. How?
Yeah, we got 7 lines going. Yeah, and that's after some of our guys have graduated to their own contracts. You know what? Those bundling things, you've got economies of scale, which a young guy starting out on his own doesn't get that benefit.
Right.
Okay. So walk through these. How about health insurance? It's all free now, right? Health insurance is all free. Everybody gets free health care.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Yeah. And in fact, it's more expensive than it's ever been for many people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now something like Samaritan Ministries is an option. That's what we're currently doing after our self-employed health insurance like tripled.
It was going to cost us $32,000 a year to maintain our health insurance when the Affordable Care Act went through. Isn't that Orwellian?
We couldn't do that.
But
so anyway, we have Samaritan Ministries, and if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. It is such a blessing to get checks from other believers, to send checks to believers that are in need. Love it. Mm-hmm. If you do go check it out, if you decide to sign up, be sure to tell them Hal and Melanie Young sent you. But for a young man who is a single, it's going to be $180 a month to do that. If he adds a wife and children, it's more. Mm-hmm. For a wife and children, it's $405 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he needs to take that into account because the fines are going up. If you don't have health insurance or something like Samaritan or the other healthcare sharing that counts an exemption with the IRS, you're going to be paying huge fines.
Okay. So that's another one that maybe you have information yourself. Maybe you need to talk to a local agent, take your young person in. And this is a great opportunity to take a young man or young woman in and introduce them to an insurance agent and say, now here, you know, you're going to have to make these decisions yourself one day. This is the kind of person that can help you. These are the sort of questions you're going to need to ask. You know, just walk them through the same as
because they're going to need renter's insurance.
Right.
They're going to need car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're not already paying it. You know, most of ours are already paying their auto insurance, mm-hmm. but they're going to need those things. Mm-hmm. It's just a part of the cost of living. And they're going to need groceries. They're going to need to plan a reasonable amount for groceries. And again, some of those economies of scale that we use to feed our large family don't work. You know, you can't buy a number 10 can for two people. It'll be bad before you all eat it.
True. I remember back in those days where we bought little tiny quantities of stuff, and it was fine for just us as a couple. You know, now our kids go off to college and they can cook for a dinner party with 12 guests, and people say, "Wow!" And they said, "This is just like lunch at our family's house. I mean, it's no big deal."
Hal, I saw the other day the pot that used to be our big stew pot when we were first married, and now it's a small pot that people use around here if they only need to cook for a couple.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so, yes, they need to be thinking about that. In fact, they need to think about what it's going to take to furnish a home. You know, some of it they're going to be able to take, use yard sale stuff, or grandma's going to have some extra things they can give them, or their aunts or uncles. But there's a lot of expense just to making it through life doing ordinary stuff. And that doesn't even count Netflix if you're going to have that, or eating out occasionally, or, you know, all that fun stuff. You know, some good advice your mama gave us when we started is to put at least $100 a month into a miscellaneous category, because something will always happen.
Well, you know, Dave Ramsey's very first step is to establish an emergency fund. And it's just a few hundred dollars. I think it's $1,000 is what he recommends that you have, just for an absolute breakdown emergency. And, you know, how long does it take to save $1,000? Especially if you're starting out and you're not earning, you know, you're earning peanuts, because maybe you're looking at the idea of being married as soon as you graduate from high school. You're not going to get the high paid jobs, you know, in that particular moment. And so
when you walk through these things and clothing, you need a clothing budget. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things that you're going to have to provide.
Yeah.
And as you walk through these things with your son, though, you got to hit a balance. Because if he is being unreasonable and he's 14 and he wants to jump into a romantic relationship, when he sees this and he sees what it's going to take, it's going to sober him up. You know, he's going to think, okay, I can't possibly even begin to do any of this before I'm 18. And really, looking at what I can make at 18 and what it costs to live, I think I probably need to go to college or do an apprenticeship or something.
Go to a community college and get an associate or something.
And when he looks at that, it can help him to sober up and realize, you know, I can't maintain this level of fervor in a relationship for 6 years before I can possibly marry.
Yeah. And, you know, frankly, from what we hear from marriage counselors and such, that say that you are in a white hot romance and decide to get married, even though it's young and foolish, but it seems romantic. Boy, that cools down real fast when you're stressed out about money, when every month is like, don't answer the phone, it's another bill collector. But rather, you know.
But, you know, let's hit the balance here, though. Because if you've got a 17-year-old or even a 19-year-old, and you're walking through this, because, you know, I remember one of ours came to us at 18, I guess, and said, I hadn't really planned to think about this soon.
And he had told us before he left home, he said, you know, this is my plan. I'm not even going to start looking until he was 20 or something. And then he came to us at the end of his freshman year. He said, this is kind of unexpected, but, you know, I've got a friend, and I think this friend is something more special than just a friend.
So you say you've got a son like that, and you lay out all this. One thing you don't want to do is scare them to the point that they say, oh, it's going to be years and years. Because if they're getting to the point that they're going to be able to support a family relatively soon, you know, in the next several years, relatively soon, then we also want to tell them, you know what, but it's worth it. That all of this is worth it. You don't have to wait till you're 35 to get married.
No.
You don't have to have everything figured out. Mm-mm. You know, your father and I lived on nothing when we were married, and we were very happy. And so we want to hit that balance of, you know, finding a wife is a good thing. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord.
And, you know, there are, I really think there are situations where it may be appropriate for a young couple to get married you know, maybe sooner than they might have planned, but to say, you know what, it's going to be hard work, but if you go in this with your eyes open and committed to doing what it takes, you know, this may be preferable to trying to keep the flame and the dynamite separated for 6 years while you get a whole bunch of things sorted out. Maybe this is something that you need to move forward and say, hey, if we are college students and we're living in a married student's housing and eating lots of beans and rice, maybe that's okay. Maybe that's really the biblical direction to take. So you don't want to be totally negative. No. But you want to be a voice of calmness.
You want to be reasoning.
Reason.
You want to
logic.
Talk about what it's going to take. And then say you get to the end of this, you talk about it. You know what? At 14, there's no way they can support a family.
Just ain't going to happen.
But a 19-year-old, a 21-year-old, yeah. And And as they're, you know, there's going to be a tipping point there.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there that you need to say, okay, so you think that this may be the one, you're interested in this girl. How can I help you get to that point that you can handle this?
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do? Let's make a plan.
And that way you're coming alongside with, you know, and you, this is a good thing to say, you know what, this is your life to live. And I want to be here to advise and to help however I can. But ultimately, you've got to stand or fall on the decisions and the commitments that you bring to it. And so, how can I help you prepare for that? How can I help you be as ready and as enabled as possible to take this on? Because it's a worthwhile thing. It's a very good thing. And I think coming to it with that attitude, not to say, man, I got to squelch this thing, but rather to say, well, let's talk this through. And, if you have misgivings, this is an easy way to be objective about it. Not to say, you know, because I said so, but rather, just look at the numbers, son. I mean, it just, the math doesn't work. Okay. Now, what can be done to make the math work? And that's, you know, that might be an argument too. In some circumstances, as you're going through these things, not to pare the budget down to the bottom at first. But to go a step or two above rock bottom to see, well, can you get it to that level to be a little more comfortable? Because if you're not quite there, then you might be able to look at it and say, well, where can you trim the budget a little bit here and there? Can you squeeze it down? Not say, well, if we really, 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 really stretch and we economize everything, then we can just barely possibly make it if everything works out right and nobody gets pregnant.
You know, Hal, this is a really good exercise, too, for the young man who's just sick of school. And he's a junior, and he's telling his parents, I'm not going to college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of school.
Mm-hmm.
To say, okay, well, then let's make a plan. And let's look for a job like it was next year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at job possibilities that you could get with your high school diploma. And let's see what those make, and let's try to make a budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because some young men aren't going to be satisfied with that. And although he may think he's sick of school, he may not feel quite so sick of school when he realizes what he's going to be making without it.
Well, I think sometimes the reason they're sick of school is because they still have this view that the school is being done by compulsion.
It's being done to them.
It's being done to them. They're being subjected to schooling, and they have not they've not taken it on as their own to say, hey, I'm preparing for my grown-up life. What do I need to learn before I launch?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, and hopefully they come to that. Hopefully they will, you know, make that connection when they're 16 or 17 at least.
Well, and you can really help them by going through this financial stuff and saying, let's just look at it. Let's look at the options. Oh, you want to go into the military? Well, what does an airman basic make?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what does a private first class make? How does a junior enlisted guy live? Where does his family live? What kind of lifestyle can they maintain? What do they expect out of that, you know, that whole living?
And that may be what God has called him to do. Or it may be that God's called him to be an officer. Mm-hmm. And he may need to go to college and to go to ROTC. But we've got to talk about this stuff and work it out and help them to see the cost-benefit ratio.
Yeah.
To say, okay, if you go this way, it's going to take you four more years before you're ready to be out on your own. But either this benefit, you're going to start at a higher level of salary. Your salary is going to go up more quickly. You're going to have more opportunities to make decisions about your life.
And it's important to point out to them as well that, you know what? Yeah, maybe you can get your high school diploma and go work on a fishing boat somewhere and make really great money for a summer job for an unmarried 19-year-old. But that's
going to be a really hard lifestyle to maintain when you have a wife who wants to see you.
Yeah, when you've got a wife and you've got two little kids at home and the bills come because that's part of, you know, grown-up life, you know, is there any room for advancement there? You know, do you start at the top of that field and then it never goes up? And that's really something
that's true in some situations. And you've got to look at that and say, what is all right to support us when we're both 19 and we don't have any children may look very different when we're 45 and have 5 children.
Yeah.
And so we need to just talk those things through with our kids.
Give them a little grown-up experience.
Not everybody needs to go to college.
No.
But they do need to have a plan for their career, for supporting their family. If they're going into business, how are you going to grow that business? You know, if they're going into the skilled labors, what are you going to do to get training to work on an HVAC system? What are you going to do to get training to be a welder? And so we need to talk those things through with them. And let me tell you a real benefit of this. Talking things through with your teenage boys is a great way to motivate them to do school. Because when a boy starts looking for the future, then he starts taking charge of his own education. Now, we're out of time.
Well, I just want to say before we get off a couple of things, resources we found really good. You know what? When we were first married, it was Larry Burkett's books. But Larry's gone on to his reward, and bless him for the help he gave us. Dave Ramsey is kind of the man who's in that position now. And you know what? We went through Financial Peace University, and we took our teenagers. We didn't go do the kids program. We took them through the grown-up program, and it's impacted them. You know, it gave one of our sons a motivation to work his way through college and graduate debt-free. And other things, you know, it gave him a vision for, hey, I want to be a successful adult. The teenager thing's good, but I want to be a successful adult. How can I prepare and get my head around that? So we really strongly recommend, look at those options with Dave Ramsey. And one thing we also recommend, if you like this program, if you like this kind of content, go out to iTunes and subscribe on iTunes. Just sign up over there and say, hey, I want this thing to automatically download because I don't want to miss a single episode when it comes in. You can listen at your leisure, but go ahead and sign up over there on iTunes. And look, we are here every week, Lord willing. We live and the recording takes, and we appreciate you coming here. Do you have anything to say before we leave, my dear?
No, that's it. Just see you next week, folks.
Okay. Well, folks, look, thanks so much. We are out here every week, and we appreciate you spending some time with us because we know you could do some other things with that time, and we're glad that you chose to spend it with us. So until next week, I hope that you'll join us again. My name is Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And so we'll talk to you then.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.